afternoon. Welcome back to Truth, Lies, Shenanigans, the live show, season 2, episode 5. I go by the name Neo Nix, and it's January 18th, 2021, and I'll be your MC for the shenanigans today. Today's show, we have another TLS spotlight. Joining us today will be Micah Payne from the Black on Black Cinema podcast. Then in Hot Topics, Lizzie Enders will tell us about Charles Barkley insisting on preferential treatment for sports athletes, getting the COVID vaccine. Gianni Storm asks what role pop culture plays in politics. And Robbie Rock talks about Nancy Pelosi's reactions to the attack on the Capitol. Should be a really great show. Before we get into it, let me introduce you to our wonderful hosts, our professor, writer, editor, journalist, and all-around sports guru out of Washington, D.C., Liz E. Ender.
Oh, me? What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday fun day. I hope you all are ready for this potentially hectic week ahead of us. But before we get into the shenanigans going on into Washington, D.C., hopefully you all will take time tomorrow, Monday, January 19th, and honor the incomparable Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His birthday was on the 15th, but nationwide, we will be celebrating him tomorrow.
Yes, yes, definitely. Now, are you all set for all those festivities down the street from you on Wednesday, Lizzie Enders?
Yes, I made my drizzly order for my liquor. Actually, no. My drizzly. I walked down to the liquor store on Friday, so I stocked back on liquor. Went to the grocery store yesterday, so I have all of my groceries. The locks on my door work. All of my knives in the apartment have been sharpened, so I'm ready. I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do it.
And our very own.
Gianni, everyone who knows me personally knows I sleep with the butcher knife underneath my pillow. No joke. Been doing that for almost 2 decades now. So I'm ready. Yes,
butcher
ma'am.
Knife.
I think we'll take some tips.
Well, not a regular kitchen knife. You go with the butcher knife, huh?
Butcher knife. Gotta be ready.
I just grab an axe. Just grab an axe and you'll be all set. All right. And our very own rock star with the amazing rock band Fallen Machine coming to you from Sudbury, Ontario, Robbie Rock.
What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday. It's a wonderful weekend. And wow, it's hard to follow Liz's energy. So much going on there. And yeah, I mean, yeah. It's I think it's amazing that people will, I hope that the celebrations for MLK are going to be peaceful. I hope that it will be, yes, I hope that it'll be peaceful. I hope it will be done tastefully.
Are you guys still in lockdown, Robbie Rock, in Canada? And how are Jose holding up?
We're holding up well. I know that the emergency order that was put in place a couple of weeks ago has now been extended for another 30 days as the COVID numbers are still pretty high during the second wave. Canada's main issue is just not having the ability to produce the vaccine domestically. So we're purchasing all of our doses. There's been some delays with the booster shots for some segments of the population, which effectively renders the first round of vaccination ineffective. So we don't have resources to waste like that. It just needs to be a better implementation policy. But Joe and I are faring well. We're doing all right.
So quick question to all of you guys real quick. Is anybody else having problems with their family talking about taking the vaccine? Complaining they're not going to take the vaccine?
No, not me. Not that I know of.
I got some family members a little off talking about
and
not going to take the vaccine. Anyway.
All right,
and streaming from Atlanta, Georgia, our model, actor, college student, Gianni Storm.
Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. I hope everybody's doing well. It feels like January kind of like went in a flash. Like it was just, if shenanigans is right out the gate, right with what happened on the 8th, I think it was the 8th or the 6th, 7th, whatever.
The 6th.
But yeah, so everything kind of happened so fast. I feel like January is almost over.
Yeah.
So I would just say everybody enjoy the days as they're falling by and just enjoy every moment that you can. And yeah, so, just have fun today.
So how are you holding up with your busy life, Gianni Storm?
I'm still trying to learn how to organize creativity and work and being a social person in my personal life. So I'm still juggling that, but it's going well.
It can be hard to juggle all those things. So, all right, guys, I have a quick fire question for you guys today. Great news. The NRA, National Rifle Association, announced that they are filing for bankruptcy to reorganize. So my question is, what are they going to do now? Go, Lizzie.
They claim they're moving to Texas. So I say, listen to Martha and the Vandellas. Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide.
Robbie Rock.
Really, they're just a despicable lobby group that they've corrupted American culture and enabled the proliferation of small arms in America. So really, so long, cowboy. Bang, Johnny bang.
Storm. Bang, bang. I love it. Johnny Storm.
Bankrupt. They're not really broke. They're just going to go deep further south and set up shop. So we'll see from them again. They're weakening, but we'll see. We'll hear from them.
I'm just going to say peace out. Now, for those that don't know... The NRA is a gun rights advocacy group who will continuously support gun rights regardless of their impacts, including mass shootings, shooting of children, shooting of black people. So let me ask you this question. Do you guys think that this bankruptcy will make a difference at all? I know Gianni Storm was just mentioning that. What do you think, Gianni?
Yeah, I think they are losing more influence and power, or their influence and power is going to a certain group at this point. So I think they're weakening. They're weakening as a nonprofit. They're a nonprofit, right?
They are actually reorganizing to a nonprofit.
Oh.
I got Ron Fries on TikTok saying, "Down here in the country, we keep our guns." Ron Fries. All right, Robbie Rock. What do you think? Will it make a difference?
I don't think it'll make a difference because, unfortunately, America loves its guns and blowing shit up. So if anything, it's going to create a vacuum. If they step away, if they do go Chapter 11 bankrupt, someone else is just going to step in and fill those shoes and lobby.
Okay. And Lizzie?
Also, too, it should be noted that they are also running from a lawsuit in the state of New York.
Filed
a lawsuit in August accusing the NRA senior leadership of violating laws governing nonprofit groups and using millions of dollars from the organization's reserves for personal use. So that's what they're really running from. That's why they're really filing bankruptcy. This really doesn't have much to do with how much money or profits they are potentially losing. They're trying to stay. They're like Trump. They're trying to stay out of jail, basically.
I don't know. Let's hope Trump does not stay out of jail. All right. If you've never been to TLS before, let me tell you a bit about us. Our hosts will be sharing their truths and opinions with you, calling out the lies out there, and pointing out the ridiculous shenanigans going on. And we always try to have fun with some shenanigans of our own. Our show streams live just about everywhere, YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter. And this season, we're streaming live on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitch TV. Just search at TLS Live Show across all platforms and invite your friends to hang out with us. Also, make sure you subscribe to the audio replay of the podcast on iTunes, Google, Alexa, Pandora, iHeart. You'll find us wherever you watch or listen to podcasts. All right, guys, let's jump right into it. Today, we have a special guest spotlight, and the spotlight is on black-on-black cinema. All right, today we have Micah Payne from the Black-on-Black Cinema and Nerdpocalypse podcast. Hey, Micah, welcome to the live show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, Micah, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about Black on Black Cinema.
I'm a nerd that likes movies.
Nerds are great. We love nerds.
And as nerds are wont to do, we start podcasts. We've been podcasting since 2011, and we've been doing Black on Black Cinema since 2012. And yeah, we started it. We started podcasting out of spite. We were listening to someone else, and my partner Jay and I. Jay came to me and said, "Dude, I think we could do a better job than this person." And then that's how it started. That's how it started.
That's a cool way to start.
That is a good way to start. A challenge.
So let me ask you, so I hear black on black cinema. So what specifically is that?
So the podcast started in 2012, where me, Jay, and a couple other friends of ours, we were just talking about, we were taking a dump on like a Tyler Perry movie. Mm-hmm. And we were like, we should talk about this on a podcast. And then we noticed that there is a certain lack of representation when it comes to mainstream reviewers, critics, reviewing specifically black film or film dedicated to a more African-American audience.
I get a sense of what you mean. I've seen some reviews where I'm like, I don't know if it were the black community, you know, I always actually go to, if I go to Rotten Tomatoes, I actually look at the reviews and see what the fans are saying, because I know a lot of reviewers are looking at it from their lens and they don't get it. They don't get the nuances of something like a Get Out, for example.
Exactly. Exactly. If they even review something like that, right? Like, it usually has to be some sort of prestige black film for someone to, you know, take the time to review it, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. And we wanted to spotlight movies. We wanted to spotlight those movies, but we also wanted to spotlight movies that people just kind of like and but may not get the love and attention that other movies might get.
Okay. Do you have a question, Lizzie Enders?
So, a lot has been made about of the idea of what genre black movies, black writers, black cinema should be about. So my first question to you is, do you have a particular favorite genre for black cinema? Something that you think that we should like just jump on and keep, you know, the train moving and going, or something that you would like to see more of in black cinema?
I would love to see more black sci-fi. Black people, like, we like all the stuff that everyone else likes, right? But you don't see us represented in a lot of sci-fi. There's a very famous story of Will Smith turning down the role of Neo in The Matrix, and because he's just like, I don't know what this is. But if, you know, if more of us were to be in black sci-fi, maybe he would have taken it. Maybe it would have been different. Doing this podcast, I have seen quite a few blaxploitation movies now, and some of them are really great, and some of them just, you know, I love Three the Hard Way. Three the Hard Way is like the first. Three the Hard Way is like the Avengers.
Oh, but you're talking about like old, when you say blaxploitation, you're talking straight from the 70s, or are you talking about remakes or like updated versions?
I'm talking like Foxy Brown.
And
Three the Hard Way, like the Mac, something like that. Three the Hard Way was really great. I do enjoy the prestige black film. But usually prestige black film involves a lot of black pain, which I understand people don't necessarily want to see all the time, but it is important because it's a part of our history, and movies help keep stuff like that alive. You would rather see that in a movie than read it in a textbook for some reason. That's how people are. But if you can get to people through movies, you can keep those stories alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have a question, Gianni Storm?
Yeah. What would you say constitute a black film or a black movie?
Great question.
So it's one of those things. Actors,
what are you talking? Yep.
It's one of those things where you kind of know it when you see it, but I usually we have a a loose criteria, but first and foremost, the movie should speak to a Black experience. I think that's very, very important. I think the movie should star a Black person, right? The Black person should be in a starring role of some sort. I would love to see more Black producers in film, but something that speaks to our experience as a culture, I is what we qualify it as. And sometimes, you know, we get a little loose with the definition, because sometimes, you know, we want to review like Four Brothers, right? Like that movie has nothing to do necessarily with Black culture.
Four Brothers is a great movie. Right.
But we love that movie.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that movie. I thought it was a great movie.
We did it on Black on Black Cinema because it stars Andre 3000 and Tyrese. And that's what I'm saying. Two.
I know. I'm with Lizzie's face on this one. I mean, that's a good point to Gianni's question. Gianni's question is valid in that, you know, what are you calling Black film? You know, that's actually a very good question.
But we don't. It's not a lot of that, right? Okay. Like we have a lot of, you know, we have fun movies like The Last Dragon. We have serious movies like 12 Years a Slave. We run the gamut.
Okay. So Z Girl, one of our former hosts on the show, she just posted in the Facebook thread.
Yes, Z Girl.
With The Last Dragon.
We're going to have to get her to guest host. The Last Dragon.
We did The Last Dragon. It was one of the first movies that we did because I absolutely love that movie. And we think it qualifies.
Great movie.
I love it probably for the same reasons. I love it because my girl Vanity is in the movie.
Yes.
Rest in peace. So yeah, I love that movie. Love it. Black women love it because of Tyrak. So
Pootie Tang. Did she just write Pootie Tang? Do you count Pootie Tang as Black cinema?
We did Pootie Tang. We reviewed Pootie Tang.
We're getting back to the low bar.
Jacqueline Robinson, Black Caesar with Fred Williamson. Black Caesar with Fred Williamson, a cult classic. All right, Robbie Rock, do you have a question?
We haven't done Black Caesar yet.
I have a couple of questions, but the first one I have for Micah is, I guess a little bit of context. I'm from Canada, so I'm north of the border. But I'm curious, which films would you recommend to someone like me who wants to educate themselves or learn about Black culture in America?
Great question.
Oh, I got.
I just want to point out, Robbie Rock, as part of this show, has really tried to work on like understanding what we deal with in American Black culture. So, I mean, he's excellent. I mean, he's excellent.
Thank you, Rob.
I'm one of the good whites.
No, that's not.
I mean, I was thinking it. I think that our show is for everyone. I think that if you are, we have quite a few non-Black listeners. And I think one of the episodes that I think would help you kind of understand the Black experience is a film called The Watermelon Man. It's an older movie, but it's about a white man who's an insurance salesman. He's a bit of a bigot. And he's proud of it. And one day he wakes up as a Black man and he sees how life treats him differently, even though he's the same guy. It's a very, very good movie. It's a Melvin Van Peebles movie. It's very, very good.
Do you do series as well?
We don't do too many series, but we have done
Lovecraft
When They See
Country?
Us.
What is it called?
We've done When They See Us.
When They See Us.
The Ava DuVernay series. Yep. And right now we're in the middle of Small Axe, which is on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. It's Steve McQueen's anthology film series about West Indian Londoners in the 60s through
the
80s.
I've seen a few of those. I've seen quite a few. I've seen about three of them personally. I think, how many is the total? Yeah.
There are five. We reviewed the first one, Mangrove, and the next couple of episodes. Oh, Mangrove is wonderful.
I haven't seen that one. I saw the second and the third one with when they were dancing in the reggae, and then I think the other guy with the police officers. Those were both of them. Both of them were pretty good. I don't know, the second was a little boring to me. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry.
Just jump in.
Do you think that you would start reviewing like indie filmmakers or like independent? Yeah, this thing. But like smaller black films, if this like if you run out of content or run out of, I'm not sure if that's possible, but like run out of black films that are known. But would you digress to a different form of media?
Any kind
absolutely, of- absolutely. Because part of this is to expose our listeners to films that they may not be aware of. We have no problem. We review things like Pariah, which is a film by Dee Rees, which is about a woman kind of coming to terms with the fact that she is a lesbian, we will review anything.
Okay.
Well, I have another question for you, Micah, very quickly. There's been a debate in the Black community about, again, the genre of films that are involved with Black cinema. And you often hear a lot of people talking about the fact that they are sick of slave narratives. They are sick of movies that are about slavery or the Underground Railroad or things like that. So what is your take on that? Especially as, you know, tomorrow we celebrate Dr. King's birthday, but we're also moving into February, which is Black History Month. What is your take on the idea or the concept of a writer, a Black filmmaker, a Black screenwriter who still feels that they have a story to tell about that period, whether it be pre-Reconstruction, post-Reconstruction? Like, what do you think about slave narratives, slave movies? Or do you think, like some people say, we need to be done with them 100%?
I don't think we need to be done with them. I think that it's a part of our story. It would be like saying, you know, we can't have military movies. Like, it's a part of American history, right? Look, I understand, especially in the times that we live in now, where Black people feel like they're just being beat on and beat on and beat on. You don't want to rush out to go see yourself get beat on screen, because look, as bad as it is now, it was way worse back then. But at the same time, you know, movies resonate with people. And movies like Detroit, which was a very hard watch. It was an incredibly hard movie to get through. 12 Years a Slave, an incredibly hard movie to get through. Selma, an incredibly hard movie to get through. But I think having those films be out there is very important. And it helps people who wish to understand, like Rob was saying, if you want to understand, you're more likely to watch a movie than you are to pick up a book. Like, it's just how it is. Right. I want to end that thought with a quote from Steve McQueen. We mentioned this on the previous episode that we just did. He says, the window for our elder stories to be told is closing, and we can't allow them to pass away and become our ancestors without them seeing themselves, their culture, and everything they've contributed to the country represented on screen. And that quote right there says it all as to why these type of films need to exist.
And I agree with you 100%, especially since, you know, I'm a professor at Howard University, so I'm dealing with freshman English. And you'd be surprised the number of young people who, one, they are being educated in systems where they are not being taught about Black history, about historical moments in American history. So they're not very familiar with a lot of these narratives, but also they kind of have, okay, whatever, that happened 100 years ago, that happened 200 years ago, so it's not really that important. And it's like, no, so then I do need to show you this movie so you can put everything in context and realize where we are, why we are where we are, and how far we have to go. So I agree, like, you don't have to watch a slave narrative. You don't have to watch a movie about slavery, but to say that we should stop making them, I totally disagree with.
All right, Robbie Rock, let me get your last question then, Robbie Rock.
Excellent. So when I was listening to your podcast, Micah, I need to ask, when you are calling out white people, are you referring to U.S. Americans, or is this an international sentiment? And if it is an international sentiment, why? So I, please.
That's right, because white Americans, well, Canadian Americans, European, I mean, Canadian Americans, Canadians, Europeans, they're, you know, it's all different. It's all different cultures.
Yeah, so I'm just.
That's a good question.
I've been to Canada. I've been to Montreal. It was very, the white people there, incredibly nice. when we are taking people to task, and we do it for ourselves too, but when we take people to task, it is a general thing. I've only been overseas a few times, so I don't have an incredible amount of experience interacting with folks from, you know, across the world. But primarily we're talking about black, white Americans, because like, that's who we see. But at the same time, you know, I'm sorry, white people have been, you know, they've been doing a lot of shenanigans all over the world.
Good choice of words. Since the beginning of time.
So we also understand, because we got a comment from someone who was from another country. Person's name is Taylor, and you know, they were a bit upset because they felt like, you know, I think they took it a little personally. And we explained to that person that no, we're not speaking about all white people, right? That would be ridiculous. But I like to say that, you know, white people need to get their house in order. There are a few folks who are messing it up for the rest of us. And
it's true.
And it's gonna hit harder if people like Rob tell, you know, bigots that they need to stop. Mm-hmm. If I tell a bigot that they need to just chill, they're a bigot. They're like, get away from me. but we need people on our side. And I firmly believe that there are more righteous people in this world, of all shades, than there are of bigots.
100% agree.
It's just that the bigots are really loud.
All right.
And we gotta shame them.
All right, let's.
And we try to do that through film, through film and the podcast and stuff like that.
Let's really quickly get to a few of these comments online because we're really out of time. But Karen Yvette Thompson said the slavery themed movies are sometimes hard to watch. However, it often inspires to keep moving forward and not allow the past to be repeated. Leica says, I think there's room for both historical films and light storytelling. Mike Winter says nobody is talking about Lovecraft Country in this thread, or did I miss it? I was actually going to bring up Lovecraft Country because, I mean, there are some incredible themes, black themes in that show. That's why I was actually asking about the series. I was interested to know if you do series, because Lovecraft Country was a great one to review, along with like Watchmen and stuff like that.
Lovecraft Country, Watchmen, so I can't comment on it.
Yeah.
All right. I highly recommend it.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. So, Micah, are there any last thoughts that you'd like to share? Tell us where people can find you. Tell us where they can listen to the podcast. Also, again, he's also on the Nerdpocalypse podcast. So go ahead and close us out.
You can go to blackonblackcinema.com. We have a list of all of our episodes there. You can go to facebook.com/blackonblackcinema. You can join our fan group. We have a lot of fun, talk about movies and whatever else is happening in the black community. You can go to youtube.com/black, excuse me, /blackonblackcinema.
COVID.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Black on Cinema.
Okay. Thank you, Micah, for joining us. We're gonna invite you back, and maybe we can do a regular segment or something, Micah. So thank you for joining us, Micah. All right.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good luck on everything.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you.
All right, guys, it's time for our hot topics.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
Each of our hosts brings a hot topic they want to share with you. We'll ask, is it a truth, lie, or shenanigans? And our panel will talk about it for a bit until the time is up. And then we'll go to our audience questions and comments. So make sure you're talking to us in all of our threads. And today we're going to start off with Gianni Storm. You're talking about the effects of pop culture in our politics. Is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
This is a little bit of truth and a little bit of shenanigans. Okay. A recent article about pop culture and politics talked about how many of us probably feel we need a break. So this posed the question in my head, should pop culture and politics mix? On one hand, there can be good things that have come from entertainers and celebrities voicing opinions, and everyone should have their right to speak up. On the other hand, we need different shenanigans to talk about. So, or at least we need like new conversations to speak about, new things to talk about that don't tie back to politics.
Right.
So pop culture has always played a major role in shaping the public's opinion, society's political activity, and even shaping our government. So my question to you guys is, do you think it should be important that we recognize the role that pop culture plays in our political life?
Let's go to Robbie Rock. What do you think, Robbie Rock?
I think that it shouldn't be dismissed because, unfortunately, people love their entertainers and seem to think that these are intelligent people. While some of them may be intelligent people and have backgrounds in politics or legal matters, I'm thinking, for example, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura's opinions on politics would hold more clout than Carl Weathers. They were all in Predator together, but
Weathers.
Two of them have run for office, have held office. So I would listen to those entertainers before I would listen to any other cast member in Predator. But it's
you're not feeling celebrities kind of.
I'm kind of tired of it. Yeah, like I mean, they're sharing their political opinions. Yeah. They're not political experts. And from a marketing perspective, I get it. It totally makes sense for politicians to get these celebrity endorsements. It totally makes sense because these are the people that have the most reach. And I think that that's more an indictment of the people than pop culture and politics. People are drawn to that celebrity status. Americans have been voting in entertainers for decades. Absolutely love that star power. And unfortunately, as we saw with the last administration, star power doesn't mean effective leadership.
Mike Winter said, not predator politics. Lizzie Enders?
So I think, one, we need to recognize and keep in mind that this is a free society. And so everyone, whether they be the common man, a politician, a homeless person on the street, they have their right to voice their opinion, including their political opinion. And I teach for the School of the New York Times, I teach a class over the summer called Sports and Politics. And people often say that sports figures should not be in politics. They should keep their political opinions to themselves. They should essentially shut up and dribble. And my comment, my retort to that is, well, do you tell the plumber that he should just shut up and fix my sink? Mm. Everyone has a right to voice their opinion about politics. And when you live in a society where now more than ever, people are putting their opinions, putting what they think, putting what they believe, endorsing who they believe on social media, there's no way to escape it. And so we can't just say, okay, you over here, because you are not, you know, a celebrity, because you're not in Hollywood, you're not a singer, you're not an athlete, you over here have more of a right to say how you feel about a certain candidate, to say how you feel about a certain issue, than the regular person who isn't a part of that life. That makes absolutely no sense, because at the end of the day, politics affects all of us. Yeah. And in a free society, we all have a right to turn it off. Yep. We all have a right not to listen. And so, I mean, yeah, does it get tired? You know, I mean, my segment is going to be on Charles Barkley and, you know, his asinine comments about COVID. Do I think he's absolutely wrong? Obviously, absolutely. Yeah. However, I don't think that he should just shut up and never talk politics again, because he has that right, you know, living in America. Now, if we were in, you know, a communist country, if we were in North Korea, then yeah, you could shut, you could say athletes, celebrities, pop culture people, shh. But we're talking about opinions here. We're not talking about people who are setting policy. We're talking about opinions here. And everyone has a right to bring their opinions to the table.
All right. So I just want to, I think Mike Wolf is sort of agreeing with you, Robbie, but he says it was definitely a mistake to elect the host of Celebrity Apprentice to be president. All right. Now, I'm actually.
We didn't let him be president. That's true. People elected him as president.
That's true.
They put him in power.
All right, so these are my thoughts real quick. So I love that pop culture affects politics, actually. So if you look at late night TV or award shows, particularly now, I think that's why we were able to get over the hump with Trump, was because of that influence. I mean, if you look at, there's a large number of TV shows and movies that incorporated the Trump era into their dystopian views of the world, right? And then, you know, and a lot of films were made because it was relatable to the Trump era. So there's a lot of films, a lot of TV shows that were made. I mean, you think of Star Wars. There was a lot of stuff in there. Black Klansman, The Handmaid's Tale. And I'm sure our audience can probably list a whole bunch of others. But if it wasn't for the constant berating of Trump in pop culture, I'm not sure we would have gotten 80 million people voting for Joe Biden. Because if I'm being honest, I would say at least half of them were not voting for Biden, but against Trump. So do I think that pop culture is important? I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Also, too, so Jacqueline Robinson, just in our comments, you know, she also brought up a good point about the 50s and the 60s. Several Hollywood celebrities participated in the March on Washington in 1963. And so pop culture provides a voice for the common man. We may not always agree with what that voice is saying, with what that message is saying, but again, that's what happens in a free society. Now, Neo just put up this picture. So this is a cover, the most recent cover of Vogue magazine, Vogue America, US Vogue, of Kamala Harris. And so there was a lot of back and forth about the layout for this, how it looked visually, that she was too casual, that she had on sneakers, that she wasn't glammed up like most Vogue covers. But I think the whole point was to highlight the fact that she isn't a glamour queen.
Right.
That this is the Kamala Harris that is going to be second in line to POTUS here in this country. And that's how we see her every single day. And I don't, honestly, I don't want, you know, Anna Wintour messing up, you know, Kamala Harris and putting on some glam gown on her where she feels uncomfortable, whatever. Like, show her as she is and let her speak to us. And of course, she had the AKA colors in the background. I'm gonna try not to offend any AKA members that may be watching the show this afternoon. But that was a lot, that cover garnered a lot of talk, a lot of, you know, chatter on social media over the last week.
Right, Johnny.
And that's the question
You have like 15 seconds, Johnny. Go ahead.
That's a question I had too to you guys about, do you think that, okay, it's good to talk about politics and pop culture, but do you think that a lot of the talk is about stuff like this, Liz, like insignificant things, like Kamala's outfit for the cover of Vogue? Like, it's not, the opinions are usually on small, minute things, and they make them big things. So that's why I feel like politics and pop culture is cool, but.
All right, Lizzie, 30 seconds.
I think we also have to remember that we have a lot of, you know, narrow-minded people here in this country. And so people who may not be in tune with Kamala Harris, if not for this cover, you know, they don't care about politics or whatever, but they care about Vogue. They care about the fashion industry. So they see Kamala Harris And I'm like, oh, let me check her out.
Did you have any thoughts, Gianni? Gianni, did you have any thoughts you wanted to share, Gianni?
No, just that mainly people are, and when they do have an opinion about politics, it's not really educated. And not saying that it's like, it's just an opinion. You know what I mean? They're just gathering from different media sources.
All right. Let's get to some of these comments online real quick. So we've got Kevin Thaxton says, actors, singers, major athletes were used by the government to make folks support both world wars. Famous folks are fair game. Mike Winter says, get her mom. Counting on your soror. I guess there's some conversation going on in the background that I'm missing.
Kamala.
Sherry Blaine Priest says, good topic, Gianni Storm, and good point, Neo Nick. Zuleika says, opinions are like a-holes. You know the rest. All right, that's it for that hot topic. Thank you for that topic, Gianni Storm. Let's move on to our next one.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
All right, Rob B., you wanted to talk about Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
It's truth and holding shenanigans to accountability. Nancy Pelosi spoke of just this Friday. And Neo, do you have her image? Excellent. So I just want to read her quote. I find this to be a very emotional time. I said to the members, we're very passionate to our reaction to this assault on our democracy, on this temple to democracy. We're passionate about our reaction, but we must be very dispassionate in how we make decisions to go forward for security, security, security. As I see many of the film and the incitement of it all by the President of the United States, but as you see the film, one figure, there were so many disgusting images. One figure of a man in a shirt with Auschwitz on it. Auschwitz. And there's more that goes to it, but I like that it's the crux of it. And when she wraps it up. To see dehumanize the dehumanization of people that was perpetrated there was so overwhelming. To see this punk with that shirt on and his anti-Semitism that he's bragged about to be part of a white supremacist raid on this Capitol requires us to have an after-action review to assign responsibility to those who are part of organizing it and incentivizing it. Mm-hmm. I think very powerful words. So my question to my co-hosts is that we have seen a rise in public displays of white supremacist movements in the U.S. over the last 4 years. Is this time for lawmakers to be taking a more aggressive stance on stamping out hate groups like the KKK, the neo-Nazis, white nationalists? The list goes on and on. But is this the time for lawmakers to really be aggressive on stamping out these hate groups? Liz.
Okay.
Obviously, the answer, I think, to that is yes, but the question is, will they? Again, we have a lot of lawmakers, particularly, you know, senators and congressmen here in Washington, who were on board with the protests,
yep.
Who were on board with, you know, trying to say that this was a fraudulent election.
There's still questions, though, if they let them into the Capitol, if they let them view the Capitol beforehand to kind of get a
the very widespread picture of Missouri Senator Joshua Hawley, you know, before the certification process started. He marched into the Capitol, walked right past all of these protesters. And no, at that point, they had not yet stormed the Capitol, but they were on the grounds right in front of the Capitol with all of their racist rhetoric, with all of their anti-American rhetoric, with all of their signs, their Confederate signs, and the Auschwitz t-shirt. And he gave a fist pump to them.
Yeah.
He gave a fist pump to them.
Yep, he did.
And so, I do believe it's time for lawmakers to get on board. But before they do that, they have to choose country before party. They have to choose country before party. And that was the biggest problem with a lot of these people, with a lot of these lawmakers on January 6th. They went in there, they were thinking about, because I don't even think a lot of them even really believe in what Donald Trump says, what he believes, what he stands for, his ideology. But the fact that he is a part of the Republican Party and their constituents voted for Donald Trump, they are, you know, panning to their party base. And so they feel like, okay, I can't speak out because then I'm going to lose votes. And so we have to get back to the point where we are thinking more about the American people than your political office.
So Representative, I want to jump in. I'll let you go next, Gianni. But Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez put out an Instagram post where she said that she was scared that the white supremacists in the House of Representatives were going to give her up and turn her in. She was scared for her life. This was an Instagram post that she put out. I was actually tried to pull the video, but I had trouble with the video, so I couldn't add it to here. But she put that out, and she was scared. On top of that, Nancy Pelosi had another meeting with some of her constituents in San Francisco, and she said, I thought it was going to be an epiphany for those who were in opposition of our democracy to see the light. Instead, it was an epiphany for the world to see that there are people in our country led by this president for the moment who have chosen their whiteness over democracy. And she said, that is what this is about. I mean,
but can you go back? Who was that that said that they were scared for their life?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
So AOC, when she said that, what do you know what Ted Cruz's response to that was?
What was that?
He called her a liar. He called her a liar. He tweeted out that she was a liar. So this is what I'm saying. We have people who are choosing their political affiliation or choosing their fan base, because he couldn't come out and say, I agree with you. I too was afraid for my life, because we were in the same building. They were in the same building. They faced the same threat, but he couldn't acknowledge that. Again, he went at her, called her a liar, a bunch of whole other names. And so it's just like, okay, yeah, these people need to get on board, but they're not ready to lay down their political ideologies to do that.
Yeah. All right, Johnny Storm, let you get in here. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. So Rob's question, your question was more, should the lawmakers make more aggressive stance on finding these white supremacists? I feel like they should have, like, piggybacking off of what Liz and Neo said, have more of a direct action. Like, there should be a plan, not even just a plan, like, maybe we need to hire more FBI, Black, Hispanic, Asian, mixed, whatever, FBI agents or like intel or something like that, so where we can have an organized group to find these white supremacists. I feel like they outnumber the people that are in the Black people that are in the jail systems that have done things like selling weed or selling a gram of, like, stuff like that. So I feel like we can replace them. But I don't know. I feel like there needs to be more direct action rather than we can plan, but it has to be something following that.
Saying that reform, so like if we're talking reform of the justice system, are you saying that there should be more white people in jails than Black people? Because currently it's the other way around. There's more Black people in the U.S. jails than white people. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say that, like, if it's right, like, if there's more white people that are doing more wrong than those Black people in that jail system, and that happens to be the case, then yeah, but not just saying there should be more white people. If there are more white people in this country, then it would make sense for that to kind of...
Percentages would match, more, right.
Yeah, but I don't know. That question is kind of loaded because it's like, it asks, why haven't we done something already with white supremacy? Like,
yeah,
what is the plan? Like,
I mean, if we're looking at the 60s, it's certainly gotten better. I mean, but not much, obviously, when we're looking at 2020. But Robbie Rock, what were your thoughts on your question?
Well, I wouldn't know that it's necessarily gotten better, because as I was diving into it, the number of hate groups or listed recognized hate groups in the United States has grown tremendously. There's more flavors of it. And while I've called out a few primarily white groups, hate exists in all colors. So I'm talking about all hate groups. And there just needs to be more aggressive
distinction.
There needs to be more aggressive laws on the books when dealing with this. Neo, I don't know if you were able to get something together with the two links I sent you at the last minute. If not, I will share them in Facebook. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. So I'm going to post two links up in the Facebook feed right now. And essentially, in Canada, the NDP party is looking, has started up a petition for people to lend their voice to stamping out these white supremacist movements in Canada. In the US, the Anti-Defamation League is more on board with that. And it's there's just some valuable information. If you want to be involved, you can be involved. And please go check out those links that I've provided on the Facebook feed and lend your voice to a good cause, stamping out hate.
All right, let me get some of these comments in. So Zuleika says, we need to get rid of political parties altogether. Gary Winter said, why get rid of political parties? But Kevin Thaxton says, other countries have more than just two political parties, and that's very true. And Mike Winter says, and pluralist governments suck. They cannot do anything. that's not a... Hey, you might be right on that one, actually, because they do struggle trying to get something done. You might be right. Ade says AOC's video speaks truth to power. Also, Zuleika says I'd be okay with more than just two. Either or has not been working.
The problem with creating more parties is, you know, people talk about it when something big happens, but we never get serious about allowing a third, fourth, fifth party to come to fruition. It's the same thing you hear when people talk about their how they do not like the Electoral College. That conversation, getting rid of the Electoral College, that conversation happens nationwide every 4 years.
And it needs to happen.
In between, no one's talking about it. There's no movement. The average American doesn't even know
how it works. You're absolutely right.
So if we're going to get, we can, you know, make it so that they're not just two parties in this country, but we have to get serious about it. Be about your business. Mm-hmm. Be about your business, people.
I'd love to see a moderate party. There were a couple other comments. Let's see. Zuleika says, in agreement with Rob B. Rock, has it, Neo? Has it, when I said, has it got, it's gotten better since the 60s?
Oh.
And then Mike Winter also agreed, Robbie beat me to my typing skills.
Yes, I've won the first game.
All right.
I think when people think of it's gotten better is that we don't see people walking around
getting lynched.
Hoods. White sheets anymore.
Right.
But what scared me,
although we are getting lynched,
about the riots last week is to, after the fact, see all of the members of law enforcement, of military, of Congress that carried out these same beliefs that we need to overthrow this certification, that it's okay to put a noose out on the lawn of the Capitol.
That was ridiculous.
These are people that are supposed to protect.
They had to build that. They had to build that shit, by the way. They had to build it.
Thank you.
And nobody stopped them.
Or they didn't build it on site. They had to carry it to that location.
Crazy. And it was okay for some reason. I'm just completely.
I don't think we're that much better than we were in the 60s.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right about
that. How they hide.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then again, Trump just brought them out. So they came out from the shadows. All right. Let's move on to the next hot topic.
Truth.
The topic,
Robbie. Shenanigans.
All right. So, Liz E., your boy, Charles Barkley, is talking crazy again. Is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
These are terrible shenanigans.
Horrible.
Terrible. So we're talking about Sir Charles Barkley, you know, former NBA star, Hall of Famer, current NBA analyst on TNT, but he also does a lot of basketball commentary as well. So on Inside the NBA last week before a game, they got into the conversation about COVID vaccines. And Charles Barkley made the statement that he thought athletes, and not just NBA athletes, athletes across the board, professional athletes in this country, whether it be NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB, they should get preferential treatment when it comes to access to the COVID vaccine because they pay more in taxes. And his co-hosts, Kenny Smith, Shaquille O'Neal, Ernie, they all kind of disagree with him, but in my opinion, they didn't disagree with
him. They didn't hard enough. I agree with you.
But my question to the panel and also to our guests, how do you feel about this? And I think, obviously, I think that a lot of people are going to be in agreement with this, but Charles did bring up a good point in the tax argument in that there's a special tax. I didn't say I agree with the point.
Okay, go ahead.
But there is a point that he's trying to make. One, Charles Barkley does not articulate his ideas very well.
That's true.
He's not a good public speaker. So a lot of times when he's trying to get a point across, he gets lost or he trips up on what he's saying.
Is it wrong? Yeah.
But there is a jock tax in this country for professional athletes, which means that in addition to paying a regular tax on your income, if you are an athlete, you also pay a tax in the state that you go to play a game. So let's say, for example, you play for, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers. You play in this, your team is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. But when you go to and play a game in a state outside of Pennsylvania, if that state collects income tax, they can also tax you as well. So that's really what he's talking about. Okay. When he says that they pay more in taxes. But there's a lot that goes into that for the common person, because the percentage based on income still isn't fair.
For me, so the problem was the words preferential treatment. That's where he kind of slipped up for me.
Of course, yes, yes. And even when, you know, Kenny Smith said, brought in the economics of it, Charles kept saying, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about taxes.
But the taxes,
we pay taxes?
Right, with money. The more money you make, the more taxes you pay.
You don't. He's not paying his taxes with heads of cattle anymore.
Exactly.
Maybe he is. You know, maybe he is.
So my question to the panel is, like, in the big picture, what do you feel? How do you feel about his statements?
Who do you want to start with?
We can start with Rob.
Cool. Careful, Sir Charles. Your privilege is showing. The vaccine really needs to be made available to the essential workers before the entertainers, regardless of their tax bracket or the additional taxes that they have to pay. Medical workers, educators, grocery, retail, frontline workers, the trainers on the team, people who are doing the maintenance on the stadiums, these people need to get it in tandem also if you're going to prop up the entertainment industry. But these are entertainers. And when we're talking about the frontline workers, they're exposed to countless selfish individuals who refuse to mask up. And that's daily. These are the people that need it most. Those who are working two jobs or more just to get by. If you're getting paid millions of dollars to play a game that you love, I'm sorry, it doesn't give you any additional privileges. The privilege is that you are getting to live this life already. You are leading a life of privilege. And if you have to sit back for a couple of years while this pandemic flattens out.
And let's point out, they have the privilege of getting like these regular tests, COVID tests, the rapid tests, they get them every day. They have the privilege of being able to pay for special treatments. Like, I'm sure a few of them probably have access to President Trump's special cocktail. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gianni.
Special cocktail. No, I like that Kenny Smith, I think his name was, posed the question, should players get, should they get special treatment when it comes to life or death? So, I mean, that question should have just been the theme of the whole thing. It's like, it should, of course, be only set for the people that need it first. If this was a scenario where there was only 10,000 people on Earth, are you going to get it because you have more, you made more money in your life than I could because you know how to dribble a ball? Like, it doesn't make sense. But I understand why he would say that, because they're in that atmosphere and they feel like, as sports people, they feel like these are, so to speak, the gods of this and this field. So I can understand why they would say the players should be the first batch and all of that. But I feel like if we're speaking societal, like all of the fields, we're not saying like musicians are Drake and Jay-Z and Beyonce should be the first because
they're rich,
provide so much. You know what I mean? It's like the same of that. It's to the same likeness of that. So I do feel like
the whole
there should not be a hierarchy. Yeah. There shouldn't be a hierarchy of vaccinations, except if it's necessity, if you need it.
So, you know, Lizzie alluded to this, but let's be clear who we're dealing with Charles Barkley. Of course, he's one of the 50 greatest basketball players. Well, he's on the list. I don't know if I believe he's one of the 50 greatest basketball. Anyway. He's been arrested multiple times.
What's knowledge right now? So yes, keep going.
He's been arrested multiple times. He was cited for spitting on an innocent girl in a crowd in 1991 when he missed spitting on someone else who was calling him racial slurs. He agreed with the Zimmerman verdict. He threatened to hit a female reporter in 2019, claiming he was just trying to make a joke. He defended the cops over the killing of Breonna Taylor, speaking in favor of the cops and saying her death is not comparable to some of the other recent deaths that happened in the country due to police brutality. And then he threw a man out of a window in a bar after he claimed he threw ice at him. Also, in 2014, Barkley said that unintelligent blacks in American society are brainwashed to put street cred ahead of success. Not that I totally disagree with that, but the point is, this is the person we're dealing with. So when he says something stupid like this, Lizzie alluded to the fact that sometimes he has these ideas and these thoughts in his head, and they just don't come out the way he was thinking them per se. And they come out really offensive.
But
First and foremost, get back to that quote.
Which is all wrong still.
But get back to that quote that you just highlighted that he made about unintelligent blacks.
Right.
Who is he actually referring to there? Like, does he consider himself to be an intelligent black man?
Great point. Because he's not.
He did not graduate from Auburn. Again, he went.
Oh, he didn't graduate.
He did not graduate from Auburn. If you listen to him, that's not really intelligent conversation that he's putting out into the atmosphere. So I wouldn't necessarily consider Charles Barkley an intelligent black man. He's a rich black man. He's a black man who has had a lot of success in his field, but that doesn't mean that he's intelligent, that he's smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, Charles Barkley has always considered himself or represented himself as a Republican. There was a time where he's from Alabama. So there was a time where he was talking about running for governor of Alabama, and he was going to do so as a Republican because Republicans are rich. But Charles Barkley comes from very humble beginnings. You know, he wasn't middle class growing up. He wasn't upper class. He would have been considered, you know, lower class. And so if you think about it, growing up Charles Barkley in Alabama, if the COVID virus had taken, had come to fruition back when you were growing up, you wouldn't have had access to it based on your criteria. The athletes of that time would have gotten first dibs before you. But also consider this. He's talking about, okay, because these athletes make more money, even though he says it's not about money, these athletes make more money, therefore pay more in taxes than the average person. So do team owners.
They make more than that's true.
Make way more than these athletes, so they would get first dibs over the athletes that you were talking about. Like, we got to be careful about the rhetoric that we use when we insert economics into medical procedures. into safety issues. Because right now he's sounding like a very racist, very prejudiced white Republican who hates poor people. And I'm not just saying poor Black people here. Charles Barkley is talking about, in this scenario, poor people in general.
Yeah.
Poor people are the ones who are at risk most right now, especially in certain cities, in certain states in this country. And he's saying, forget them. They poor. They not paying what they need to pay in taxes. So they shouldn't have be first in line for this medical treatment, even though the numbers are high in their area. They are dying. They are on ventilators. They are the ones that are in hospitals. Even though, yeah, we have athletes who are testing positive, and that's because of league failures. Yeah. Athletes are testing positive. Athletes are experiencing some symptoms, but it's not what we're seeing in communities that are being hit hard. Yeah. So you want these privileged athletes who have access to the best medical care.
And the relative immunity. It's not immunity, but their symptoms, they tend to, the healthier you are, the more symptom free you tend to be.
And so you're saying you want these people to have better access, to have more privilege to a COVID vaccine than the average person who could be in need. Now you're talking like a very wealthy right winger who thinks that the more money you make, the better your life should be across all fronts in this country. Especially in terms of access. And I'm just like, Charles, the more you sit up there and talk this clown stuff, the more you sound like the person that you say you aren't.
Let's close this out. So, Rob B, you got a couple of, tell them, Rob, you know, hand claps on online. Some people like what you had to say. Looks like Ade and Zuleika. All right. Kevin Thaxton says, kick rocks, Barkley. Derry Winter says, we may be seeing them even as they walk down MLK Boulevard. Not sure what she's referring to. Ade says, Barkley is off the deep end. Derry Winter says, he has not changed. His comments and behaviors are not new.
No, they're not. I've interviewed Charles Barkley before. Like, they're not new. Like, the first time you meet him and you talk to him, he's funny. He's personable. He's charming. But then when you start to listen to the nonsense that comes out of his mouth, you're just like, okay. You're the C word that I can't say on this show because Neo gets offended, but that's what you are. And
TikTok gets offended too, by the way, so I don't want to get kicked off.
Talk about athletes paying taxes. Let's not talk about the number of athletes that have been taken to task by the IRS because they don't pay taxes. Like, let's be clear. There are a lot of athletes that are cheating the government right now.
Sherry Blaine Priest says, Robbie Rock said it well, frontline workers and people with compromised immune systems need vaccine ahead of anyone. All right, let's close it out on that. Great hot topics, guys. Great hot topics.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
Let's get to the cheating game. Are we going to the cheating game right now?
we're going to see. Hold on up. Let's see how we do. All right, as you know, we love to end our show with a fun game, just to end it out nicely. So, of course, it's not working. That's
awesome. we might
have to switch games if this doesn't work. Hold on. All right, we're going to have to come up with another option because this is just blowing rocks right now.
We can play Never Have I Ever.
Let's do it. I'm going to let you lead it. You ready?
Five fingers up, everybody.
Okay. Let me close this out.
And the way you play is you're supposed to say something you've never done, but don't cheat and say something like I've never lived in Canada or something to get Rob out. So you just want to say something you've never done, and the person who gets their hand down all the fingers down the quickest is out. The last one standing. Last one with the last finger standing
with. All right. Ready? Okay. Go ahead. Wait, you start off.
Five fingers means what?
If I say something that you've done, put your finger down.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, wait. Never have I ever smoked a cigarette. Who Who's next? Nia?
Go ahead, Robbie.
Oh, Rob.
Never ever have I brewed hard liquor.
Brewed it?
Or distilled hard liquor.
Oh, if we have done it. Hand down if we have done it, right? All right, Lizzie?
Bring it down, yep.
What you got going on over there, Gianni? Woo!
Wait, brewed hard liquor or took a shot of liquor?
Oh, distilled. Made it.
Made it.
Produced it.
That's why I was like, what? Gianni make it liquor? No.
All right, go ahead, Lizzie.
Okay.
Never have I ever.
Let's do three fingers, by the way. Three fingers. Let's do three fingers because we don't have enough time.
Never have I ever punched someone in the face.
So we take it down if we have.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay. Never have I ever gotten into a physical fight with a family member.
Never have I ever.
Self defense.
Wait, so if I did it, yeah, okay. If I did it, I don't put a finger down.
No,
if you did it, you put a finger. You're not supposed to tell on yourself. You're supposed to like help yourself.
Oh.
But if you hit someone, okay. Yeah, if you fought somebody in your family. Never have I ever ran over a deer. Okay.
Does a dead deer count?
Yep.
Boom.
All right, I'm out.
Wow, Neo. Yeah.
So never, ever have I struck anything larger than a squirrel with my car.
I don't drive.
Fair enough.
Lizzie?
Never have I ever worn counterfeit designer clothing or apparel.
You've never worn, so Lizzie, you've never worn designer, nothing other than designer?
I've never worn fake shit, no. Oh.
I would have been out. I'm way out the game now. All right, go ahead, Gianni. I'm out.
Never have I ever swore at my parents or mother or father. Well, parents.
Oh, my bee's out.
I'm out.
All right, Lizzie.
Can I pass?
No.
Maybe you guys can do one. Like Neo, you can do one for
her. Yeah, Neo and Rob can do one for us.
Never ever have I had a white Russian drink.
You should have left the drink off. Never ever have I ever had a white Russian not drink. Okay. I can't see. I'm trying to see. Never. Oh, still up. Okay. Go ahead, Robbie. Give her another one. Go ahead.
Never ever have I attended a professional wrestling match.
Like WWE?
Oh, I actually have.
All right.
That's very funny.
So that means Lizzie wins the game then.
I have.
Wow, that's so funny.
Oh, you have? Oh, so it's both of you. So how does it work when both of you?
No, we both lose. Nobody wins.
Okay, well, we're gonna I'm giving it to Gianni. Gianni hasn't had a final thought for a bit, so we're going to give that to Gianni. Good job, Gianni, and good thought in the game. Way to come in through. Clutch game. I love it. Before we close out, let's get some shout outs in.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
All right, let's start with Gianni Storm. What shout outs you got, Gianni?
Shout out to Ro and Jose, because we haven't shouted you guys out in a long time, but you guys do great work, and we appreciate you for all that you do for the squad and the crew, whatever we call ourselves. So thank you, Jose, and thank you, Ro.
Yeah, Ro was moderating the Instagram Live today, and Gianni, you did a great job on the TikTok Live moderating. Robbie Rock?
I want to give a shout out to our girl Z. Thank you for your wonderful participation. It's wonderful to see you, and there was no cheating. You know what? I'm going to have a cheating tantrum. The girls were cheating. It was their game.
They cheated. Yeah. They blinked my power out. That's what happened. They blinked my power out. Somehow they sent some vibes and blinked the power out.
We miss you, Z. We miss you, girl.
We do miss Z. We need Z to come back and guest host at least one show. All right, Lizzie, shout out.
I want to give two shout outs to my New York peeps. One is to my former New York hairdresser, Miss Myrna Girl. As you can see, I am on strug. If I could, I would come visit you up in New York, or I would fly you down here, but I'm trying to make it work. And then also a shout out to my goddaughter, Miss Savannah Lee. She will be 19 in a week, but also she is a freshman at Carnegie Mellon up in Pittsburgh, and she is moving into her first apartment this weekend. Apartment, they're kicking them out of the dorms after the first semester due to COVID. So second semester, all of the freshmen are moving into apartments. So she's moving into her first apartment this weekend. Nice. Love you, girl. I'm going to be sending you a package.
I just want to point out before I say my shout out, Kevin Thaxton called me a Bambi basher. My shout out goes to MLK. Martin Luther King, his birthday was on the 15th. We're celebrating it tomorrow in the U.S. So that's my shout out for the day, Martin Luther King Jr. All right, that is all the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. We hope that maybe you learned something, gained a new perspective, or even got some things off your chest online. Don't forget, we need your support to keep this going. Like, follow, subscribe at TLS Live Show. Make sure you're checking out our YouTube clips. Go to YouTube at TLS Live Show. And don't forget to subscribe to our audio portion of the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Alexa. Just search Truth, Lies, Shenanigans. It's that simple. I had a fun time tonight. I hope you did too. Our next live show is on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Don't miss it. We're going to be talking all about that crazy inauguration. Whatever goes down, we'll be talking about it. So we want to hear your thoughts if anything crazy goes down. And our winner for today's show, Gianni, coming through in the clutch with the great game. Gianni Storm, you get our final thought of the day. What's our final thought? Close us out.
Final thought of the day is me mentioning actually the TLS Creative Contest. So I will just drop details and promotion tomorrow. You guys will see it on your social media. But yeah, we have a new contest for Truth, Lies, Shenanigans. So stay tuned.
All right, so take a look online. All right, guys, thank you so much. Have a great week.